The Bible says that Israel is the apple of God's eye, and that he will provide for and protect her. We also read in Zechariah 12 the following warning to the nations. Behold, I am going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes reeling to all the peoples around. And when the siege is against Jerusalem, it will also be against Judah. It will come about in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will be severely injured, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it in that day, declares the Lord. I will strike every horse with bewilderment and its rider with madness, but I will watch over the house of Judah while I strike every horse of the peoples with blindness. Can we believe what the mainstream U.S. media reports concerning events in Israel and the Middle East? Stay tuned for my conversation with noted researcher and author Avi Lipkin next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And, of course, you can listen to every episode on our website, SoaringEagleRadio.com. My guest today is Avi Lipkin, alias Victor Mordecai. Born in Flushing, New York, grew up in the greater New York City area and moved to Israel at the age of 19, and that was in 1968. Avi attended New York University, Washington Square, majoring in Sovietology, holds a degree in Spanish Latin American Studies from Hebrew University. Avi served in the IDF from February 72 until January 73 as part of the IDF spokesman for the Judea and Samaria Command. In 1990, Avi began lecturing in Christian churches and synagogues in the U.S. as well as appearing on radio and TV. He has appeared in well over 1,000 churches and synagogues around the world, as well as on hundreds of radio and TV shows worldwide. He's written 5 books, his Fanatic Islam, A Global Threat, Christian Revival for Israel's Survival, Islamic Threat Updates, Almanac No. 1, Israel's Bible Block, and Islam Prophesied in Genesis. The first 3 books were written under the pen name of Victor Mordecai for security reasons, but he wrote the 4th and 5th books under Dennis Avi Lipkin since he is running for the Israeli Knesset elections at the head of a Judeo-Christian Bible Block party. And we certainly want to talk about that, Avi. Your website is VicMord, VicMord.com, where you can find all of Avi's teachings, audio, video, CDs, DVDs, and all those kind of resources. Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Avi.
Great to be on your show first time, and I hope it's not the last.
Well, I certainly hope it isn't either, Avi. I've followed you for quite some time and have enjoyed your talks and conversations and interviews with other people, and I'm just thrilled to have you on the show. As I read in your bio, you moved to Israel in 1968. Now, that means that you've seen a lot of changes in Israel in that time, and I'm wondering, as we get started today, if you'd tell us about some of the remarkable things that are going on in Israel today, some of the changes you've seen since you've been there.
Well, firstly, just to give you a very personal example, my wife and I built a house in the middle of the desert to the southeast of Jerusalem. And when we built our house, there was nothing here. It was just rocks and snakes and scorpions and camels, and very romantic, by the way.
Yeah.
And now there are neighborhoods around my house, and we were the first in this specific area here. And we turned everything green. Everything is gardens. You know, we have walls, obviously, so that the snakes and scorpions can't get through. And it's like we're living in the middle of paradise now. We have lots of trees, lots of birds, lots of cats, lots of dogs, maybe too many dogs barking all the time. And so we literally have turned, my wife and I have turned our little piece of the desert green, and so forth and so on for the whole country. As the millions and millions of people come home from all over the world, we are turning this country into a garden. It's, I think, the only country in the world where every year there are more and more trees. Another thing I wanted to share, and this is maybe I'm changing the subject a little bit, but, you know, we made peace with Egypt in 1979, and then we made peace with Jordan in 1994. And I was an Israeli army spokesman during the time we made peace with Jordan. And in my army officer course in 1993, we were told that really the only enemy that Israel faces, a very, very tough enemy, is Syria, that Syria has rockets and atomic and biological and chemical weapons, ABC weaponries, and that could pose a threat to the existence of Israel, even though we had peace with Egypt and Jordan. So you're a pastor, you're a man of God, and you said very clearly, anyone who comes against Israel, the apple of God's eye, is going to be punished. So, yes. You know, the rhetorical question, where is Syria today? There is no more Syria. Syria and Israel had nothing to do with it. Israel, God has destroyed Syria as a unit. It is now broken up into cantons. And the Shiites and the Sunnis, who both hate Israel, are destroying each other. This is a flashback to 2 Chronicles chapter 20, in which three armies march on Jerusalem and then destroy each other.
Yes.
And the same applies to Iraq. Iraq, by the way, never made peace with Israel. Look at, where's Iraq? Iraq self-destructed. You have a Shiite part of Iraq, a Sunni part of Iraq, which is ISIS, and you have the Kurds in the north who are little by little moving southwestward towards the Euphrates. And I predict that Israel is going to move northeastward to the Euphrates, and we will meet up eventually with the Kurds as our new neighbors to the north.
Yes. Wow. Well, that's a very interesting development, and I want to pursue that a little further. I know you have some very keen takes, prophetically speaking, based on the developments that are going on over there, and I'd really like to jump into that in a moment. I'd like to get an update, though, before we do that, Avi, on the Bible Block Party. How is that going? I know you're getting that registered, signatures and all of that. Where's that at?
Okay, well, firstly, I'm planning to come back to the States March 6th and then return to Israel around April 14th. So my plan is to, I already have the signatures. We're lacking the money, but I'm going to probably end up taking a bank loan to pay whatever difference there is. This baby is fighting to get out of the womb. It's fighting to be born. And so I have another basically 3 weeks until I go to the States. So this party will be registered within 2 weeks. At that time, I'm going to try one more time to raise money for the party so I can have a budget for a campaign, you know, because you can have the most expensive car in the world, but if you don't have money for gasoline, the car don't go nowhere.
That's right.
So, and also we're going to probably come out with a crowdfunding program. There is a nice Christian group out in Oklahoma called House of David, and they're putting together a bridge to Zion, which they raise money for different Christian ministries. And so they're going to raise money for us too, for the party. So if you look up the Bible Block Party or Gush HaTanachi in Hebrew, people will be able to support financially through the computer if they want. But like I said before, we're over the 100 signatures already. And in another week, 2 weeks, we're going to go to the lawyer's office, get all the paperwork, go with the lawyer to the Knesset, which is our Congress, our parliament, And so by the time I get to the States in 3 weeks, the party will be submitted. And then we have to wait 45 days for the bureaucracy to give us the recognition that we need. At that time, we can no longer raise monies outside of Israel. But like I said before, the party will be registered. We have made history, and we're going to bring together Jew and Christian in Israel, marching together to fulfill God's plan for this land.
Yes, very exciting. Very exciting. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, do you have an itinerary for your visit here in the States? Do you publish that, or for security reasons not?
Okay. I can't say that the first part of the trip will be in Florida.
Okay.
Then the next part of the trip will be Texas, Oklahoma, and then I'm going to work my way up through Kansas, Iowa. I don't know yet if I'm going to make it to Ohio. But somewhere along the line, I'll be somewhere near St. Louis. So, like, it's still nebulous.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, I was just, if we can get that information, I'd be happy to share that with some of my folks here in case they're close.
We should do that by regular email and not through Facebook or Skype.
Yes, okay. Yep, we will do that then. Okay, well, let's jump into what's going on in the Middle East, Avi. And one of the first questions people ask me is, I don't really trust the mainstream media in the United States, so where can I go to get factual information about what's really going on over there? How would you answer that question?
Well, as you know, there's something called the underground media on the computer.
Yeah.
There are Jewish, there are Christian internet sites that provide very, very good knowledge about what's really going on. I don't know if you want to go through the names, but, you know, the Christian Embassy, ICEJ, the JerusalemPost.com. There are many, many different ones. You know, people can write to me, and I'll make them a whole list of different email sites. But once you get onto one or two, all the others start appearing as well. What I have basically is I get, like, the same piece of news five times a day from different websites, Jewish and Christian, that are out with the truth. And the reason that the media, the mainline media, unfortunately, including Fox, I believe.
Right.
Because the Arabs own the media.
That's correct.
And one of the greatest lies is that the Jews control the media, which they don't. The Arabs control the media, and then they blame it on the Jews. And, you know, if you, for example, are a news editor on Fox or CNN or MSNBC, and you go against the Arab line, you're fired. And so nobody who wants to stay in the job is going to ever do anything against the main line, which is controlled by Arab advertising money. You know, you can't run a radio, TV, or newspaper without advertising money.
Yes.
The Jews also in America, unfortunately, are not very savvy when it comes to understanding what's going on. When I go to the United States, the Jewish people don't want to really hear what I have to say. It's people like you guys, you know, especially Calvary Chapels, Assemblies of God, Baptist churches, people really, and not the big churches, mind you, because the big churches are afraid to lose membership.
That's right.
It's the little churches with 50 to 100 people that everybody is very cohesive with the pastor, very in agreement with the pastor, and they're not afraid to know the truth.
Amen.
Those are the people that invite me. And those, you know, so I go, listen, I've been speaking in churches now for 26 years, and I love every church I go to. Obviously, churches don't invite me unless they love me, so I feel very at home, you know, preaching to the choir and connecting the dots. You know, the Christians have the dots, but what I do is to connect the dots and to give the final picture of what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a good segue, Avi, I think, into this this whole idea, this whole topic of what I consider to be the unceasing, unreasonable, and illogical hatred of Israel by the Muslim world. It's just constant. It's a constant barrage in the media here of anti-Israel, I call it propaganda. And I'm wondering, how does that affect the everyday life of the average Israeli there in Israel, knowing that that their reputation is really being destroyed by global media. Does that have any impact on folks there in Israel?
Well, to tell you the truth, we're kind of used to it, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the points I always stress, and I don't know if what I'm going to say now is going to get me into trouble in the United States when I get there, because I know that there's increasing pressure on anybody who speaks against Islam.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a 3-year jail sentence. I won't say it's suspended, but I'm on probation now for saying that Allah, the God of Islam, is not the same as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, of the Jew and the Christian.
Right.
Allah, I call him actually, it's not just another God. Allah is Satan, Lucifer, the devil.
Yes.
And I said that Islam is not a religion even. Islam is a criminal psychosis bent on the destruction of the human race. So it's not only the Jews they want to kill. They want to kill the Jews on Saturday, the Christians on Sunday, the Hindus, the Buddhists, the blacks in Africa any day. And then the Muslims are also killing each other any day. You call that a religion? That's a psychosis. It's a sickness. I want you to know that I love the Muslims very much. And I used to hate German people, but now I realize Germans are fantastic people. The problem was Nazism. And in 1945, yes, when you banned Nazism, the Germans became wonderful people again. In World War I, Jews fought in the German army under Kaiser. I don't know if you know this or not, but Kaiser was the only leader in World War I who gave his Jewish soldiers kosher food. And so the Jews fought like lions in the German army. My family, personally, in Poland, which was liberated by the Germans in World War I, we were saved from starvation. The Russians, under the Tsar, were trying to starve the Jews, and the Germans came in and fed us. I don't know, have you heard of Michael Medved, the radio
yes.
show personality?
Yes.
His grandfather, turns out, when we figured it out, his grandfather was an officer in Kaiser Wilhelm's army, and he fed my grandfather and my family, saved us from death.
Wow.
Gave us clothing and food and took care of us. And that's actually one of the reasons why the lights did not go on in the 30s for the Jews. And they went to the concentration camps willingly, thinking that it was the same Germans of World War I. And that shows you how the devil can turn around a good people like the Germans. I'm not getting into politics. I'm not getting into who is right about World War I, because, you know, history is written by the victor.
Right.
But the Jews were used to a good conquering neighbor called Germany in World War I. And then in World War II, 6 million marched off to the gas chambers without really knowing what was happening.
Yeah. Well, that's a good... That's a good lead into a little bit of a history lesson, Avi. I know that you have just a wealth of information. I've heard you speak on this before. The fact is that until 1964, there was no talk of a Palestinian state. That idea didn't even exist. Well, what happened? What changed that to now all of a sudden we have to have a split state solution. We have to have a split Jerusalem and all of the other things that they're advancing. What happened?
Well, the whole idea of the using the term Palestine is what we would call in Judeo-Christian terms, replacement theology.
Yes.
And that is that Islam of the Palestinians replaces the Jews and the Christians, and that the Palestinian state replaces Israel. And it has to be made very clear, they are not interested in a Palestinian state. They are interested in destroying Israel in its entirety. And the use of the whole idea of a Palestinian state is just a strategy to completely destroy Israel. And so, you know, I'm very happy to say that even though our leadership in Israel makes mistakes sometimes, but they're doing exactly the right thing. And I want to praise Netanyahu and say that our Prime Minister Netanyahu is the right man in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And one of the little known secrets among the average of American, but well known by folks that pay attention to what's going on, and as you mentioned earlier, rightly connect the dots, is the fact that the Saudis and the Saudi money really has a grip, I would even say perhaps control, of the U.S. White House and our State Department. And I say that not just in reference to the present administration of President Obama, but this goes back several administrations, and I'm wondering, Avi, if you share that same viewpoint.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I like I said before, I was talking about Michael Medved, and who's a great fellow. You know, in World War II, 6 million Jews died. And of course, you know, everybody gangs up on the Germans. And of course, the Nazis are to blame for the physical killing of 6 million Jews. But the Saudis were calling the shots. The deal was like this. The Saudis were saying to the Germans, you kill the Jews, we're with you. Then they went to the Allies, the British, the British, Canadians and Americans, and said, you deny the Jews visas to escape Nazi Europe, we're with you. So what's the U.S. Going to do? What's Britain and Canada going to do? They're going to deny the Jews any ability to escape the Nazi gas chambers. And so Germany was not alone. There are three, how shall I say, 3 feet to a tripod. Mm-hmm. And it was the Saudi foreign policy, the Americans, British, and I'm not condemning the Americans. The British and the Canadians. I'm saying that this was a strategy, not that the Arabs go over to the Nazis because of the oil of Saudi Arabia. Yes. And then after World War II, the problem was the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And again, you know, people like George Marshall. George Marshall was a great guy. I mean, he rebuilt Europe. He opposed the creation of a Jewish state. And he said that the Arabs would kill all the Jews. There would be another Holocaust. And but basically what was in his thinking was we need the Arabs on our side to defeat the Soviets. So the Jews will be sacrificed. And you know, the only thing that made America great, and I teach about this in the churches, is the barrel of oil.
Yeah.
Now, with the, you know, the Soviet Union, basically Soviet Union does not exist anymore. Russia has a very, very bloody history with the Sunni Muslims. For 1,000 years, they've been fighting the Turks. And one of the things the media is now just beginning to talk about is the hatred between Turkey and Russia. Mm. And, you know, the Russians, you know, I don't want to blame them, but you might have heard there is a Turkic group called the Circassians, and the Russians killed 3 million of them in 1854. Do you think the Turkic Muslims are going to forgive the Russians for this? So the Russians then go and support the Shiites, you know, because the enemy of my enemy is my ally. And so it's very logical that Russia is siding with Bashar al-Assad, with the Hezbollah in Lebanon, with the Shiites in Iran, in Iraq, with Iran, in order to fight the Sunnis, who are never going to love the Russians anyway. And the Americans, the British, and the Canadians, NATO, I go with the Sunnis, because many people, and the man who always pops to my mind is Senator McCain. The only thing that he's living in world in the Cold War, he's living in the Vietnam War still, and for him, Russia is the great enemy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if the Sunnis hate the Russians, hey, let's work with the Sunnis. And you know, that worked in the Afghanistan War from 1979 to 1989, in order to get the Soviets expelled.
Yeah, yeah. Not a good strategy today, though, because you really, in my opinion, you really can't trust any of the particular factions. They hate each other, but they are Muslim, and if it's necessary, they'll join together to oppose America. America's the great Satan, and I think they refer to Israel as the little Satan, don't they?
Very correct, and that their plan is, forget about Israel. Israel is not of interest to them. Their plan is to knock out the big Satan, America.
Yeah.
And what we see happening is, and I share about this in the churches, that there are two types of Islam, according to Avi Lipkin. There is what we call the revolutionary Islam, and then there's the evolutionary Islam. Hmm. The revolutionary Islam is 9/11 Islam. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand it. 9/11 is revolutionary Islam. Al-Qaeda, ISIS, these are revolutionary Islam. These people cannot destroy America. The ones who are more insidious are the evolutionary Islam, which is the Saudi government. You have also Qatar. These countries, they're spending billions, maybe trillions of dollars. They're investing into the U.S. economy to take it over. And we see this already happening with the media.
Yes.
The media is owned. The banks are owned by the Islamic world. So what's happening is little by little, as the American industry flees America because of the high labor costs, and then they go to Bangladesh or, you know, all these other countries, America becomes increasingly addicted to the Saudi and the Islamic oil and cash, and now numbers. And when I say numbers, I mean the immigrants or refugees coming into the U.S. And I think that you have 20 million Muslims in America, as opposed to 6 million Jews. So the Jewish so-called number two status is gone. It is now the Muslims who are number two in America, and the Jews are number three. I have heard from Hindu friends of mine that the Hindus are reaching 6 million. So the Hindus pretty soon are going to overtake the Jews. The Jews are a remnant of history in American history. Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to share, a very scary thought, but it's very important for the Bible Bloc Party. We have 7 million Jews living outside of Israel. They're intermarried with Christians to the rate of 80% in certain places. So what we're going to see happening is 7 million Jews and their Christian spouses, which is a total of about 10 million people, are going to either flee from America and the Western Christian countries to Israel or be slaughtered by ISIS. In other words, you have a two-pronged attack on America. You have the money of the so-called evolutionary Muslims buying everything out. Together with that, you have the, of course, the immigrants coming into the U.S. And the other prong is the revolutionary, which has always dreamt, like the Nazis, of annihilating the Jews. And so I predict Israel's population will grow from 6 million Jews and 500,000 Christians to about 16 million Jews and Christians when these Islamic attacks really, really come into play. To scrape the Jews up and expel them or kill them from out of America.
Yes. Wow. Well, it's a well-known fact, Avi, of history. If people care to find it, the information is available, that the United States government has been involved since the 1950s in toppling sovereign governments. They did so in Iran. They did so in Guatemala and a lot of other places, and I think that the U.S. government was even responsible for toppling Gaddafi in Libya, although they used proxies, and Mubarak in Egypt. But in doing so, they've created this beast that's they've lost control over, and I'm talking specifically of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and those types of terrorist fronts. That was U.S. money initially. I don't know that it's U.S. money now. Perhaps it's the Saudis. I'm wondering if you could shed some light on that.
Okay, I have to indeed, elaborate, embellish a little bit what you just said. And just to give an idea that I have to also give one little correction. It's not your fault, it's my fault. I've written 7 books, not 5. And my 7th book is called Islamic Rivalry. It talks about the rivalry within Islam and why America does what it does and why Russia does what it does. All of this is available from my website. It's also the most recent book is available from Kindle, if people like to read on Kindle.
Excellent.
They go to Amazon and look up Islamic Rivalry or Avi Lipkin and it'll show up.
Okay.
So this book explains, and this is what I'm going to share now. Iran is a very, very interesting country, very wonderful country, good people. The Jewish people have had very good relations with the Persian people for thousands of years, going back to the savior. Who is the savior? Cyrus is described as the savior, you know, who helped Jews, Ezra and Nehemiah, to go back to the land of Israel, was helping the Jews hopefully to build, actually did rebuild the second temple.
Mm-hmm.
Which became Herod's temple. The Persians came in and actually liberated the Jews from the Byzantines in 614 AD. And of course, later they were defeated by the Arab invasion. We had very good relations with the Shah of Iran. But anyway, let me go into a little bit more modern history.
Sure.
In World War One, the Iranian people were really very admiring of the Germans. And don't forget that the next door neighbor of Iran was Turkey. Turkey was a member of the Central Axis powers. And so the Iranians were very close to joining the Axis against the British and the Russians. So Iran was occupied by British and Russian troops. And so their will was suppressed. World War II, again, the Iranian people were pro-German. And Turkey was neutral in World War II, but the Iranians were pro-Nazi. And so the Russians, the British, and the Americans set up zones in Iran. And of course, this is almost never taught in American schools. And when the war was over, the Iranians had now, they were free to go about business again. But the Americans wanted a pro-American Iran. They didn't want Iran being too close to the Russians. And like I said before, there was a natural fellowship between the Russian people and the Shiite Iranians, because both of them hate the Sunnis and have been fighting them for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, Americans don't know the history.
That's right.
So anyway, so they had an election in Iran, and the name of the prime minister is Mossadegh. Now, again, 99.99% of the Americans have never heard of the name Mossadegh. But Mossadegh was a nationalist, very, very independent-minded. He was not an enemy of the United States. He was just, you know, very nationalist.
Right.
And so the United States, as you said correctly, the CIA deposed him and brought in the Shah. The Shah was there already, but the Shah was more like a figurehead.
Yes.
And the Shah was very pro-Western. And so the Shah basically became the dictator. And the Iranians never forgot it. The Iranians never forgave the Americans. Okay.
Yep.
1979, America, forgive me for saying that America has a mentally retarded president, but America had a mentally retarded president called Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski, they didn't like the Shah because he was a dictator, and Democrats don't like dictators because they are guilty of human rights violations. So the, you know, so Jimmy Carter brings down the Shah of Iran and brings in the worst possible leader, Ayatollah Khomeini. And the reason he brought him in was because Ayatollah Khomeini was a religious Muslim, and Jimmy Carter was a religious Christian Baptist. And he said, well, you know, we both serve the same God. And this is one of the greatest lies and one of the greatest fallacies, which I combat in the churches. And I teach why Allah is not God. And if you serve Satan, God forbid, it's not the same as serving God or Jesus Christ.
Right.
And Carter stabs America's best ally in the back. And, of course, Khomeini, the first thing he did when he came to power was to take the American embassy hostage. So it shows you how stupid the president was. And the world today is facing a nuclear war because all the Arab countries want nuclear weapons now that America has kowtowed to Iran.
Yes.
So this is really a tinderbox here now. Okay. Then, okay, here comes the next fallacy, the next mistake. The United States supports Saddam Hussein to attack Iran. So Saddam Hussein goes to war in 1980 against Iran, and it's a 9-year war. 2 million people die in this war, which was inconclusive. It was the borders basically remained the same. And so then what happens is after the war, of course, the Iranians still hate the Americans. Now Saddam Hussein hates the Americans because the country is bankrupt. The country needs help. And, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was prime minister, who was vice president under Reagan, basically encouraged Saddam Hussein to go to war. And then after the war was over, did not stand with him. You know, Herbert Walker Bush became president in 1988 and basically stabbed Saddam Hussein in the back. So Saddam Hussein now hates the Americans.
Yes.
So Iran hates the Americans. The Sunni Saddam Hussein hates the Americans. And in 1991, he says to the Shiites in Iraq, okay, if you rise up in revolt against Saddam Hussein, we'll help you. And, of course, the U.S. did not help them. So the Shiites hate the Americans and the Sunnis hate the Americans. Okay, now let's fast forward today. You have ISIS. What's ISIS? ISIS is these Saddam Hussein soldiers who were fired by the Iranian government and by the Shiite regime in Baghdad. And so all of a sudden you have these people who for generations were soldiers under Saddam Hussein, and all of a sudden they're fired. They don't have a job. So the U.S. money and the Saudi money goes to help form what they call the Sunni surge. And the Sunni surge meant, hey, let's put these people back in business again. And what do? They create ISIS because they say these Americans are so stupid. Everything they do, they destroy. And the Shiites are saying everything the Americans do, they destroy. And, you know, Israel's kind of afraid because sometimes we're afraid that it's going to happen to us, too, because America has this tendency to stab its allies in the back.
Right.
Okay. And Saudi Arabia is supporting them. Iran is supporting the Shiites. And you have a 1,400-year war between the Sunnis and the Shiites. And the Americans, everything they touch explodes in their face. It's a very dangerous thing here in the Middle East. And Americans don't have a clue about what's going on. So if you work in the media, you do what you're told because the money's your salary's coming from these Sunni Arabs.
Yes, yes. Boy, that's a great synopsis, Avi. I appreciate that. That probably will no doubt will enlighten a lot of our listeners, but it'll probably startle a few who are not aware of the complicity of the United States and in the affairs of sovereign nations in the Middle East. Quietly, somewhat quietly, I guess I should say, Saudi Arabia has been spending a lot of money on weaponry, building up their arsenal. Why are they doing that?
Well, you know, firstly, I have to tell you something. In my third book, and I repeat it in my seventh book, I don't know if you ever heard of this or not. We've never met personally, and I don't know if you've read all seven of my books, but in my third book, which is called Islamic Threat Updates Almanac, I have an intelligence piece, which I put in the book, and it's about Saudi Arabia and a Chinese-built missile base at the Al-Salil Oasis. And this is the book came out 10 years ago. No, excuse me, I'm wrong. Came out 13 years ago. And the book talks about the Chinese supplying the Saudis with 120 Dongfeng missiles. The Dongfeng missiles are basically Pershings. And the Pakistanis, you know, the Pakistanis are broke, but the Saudis paid for them to have a nuclear project. And Abdul Qadir Khan, father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb, was given all this money by the Saudis to create a nuclear warhead, which would fit on the Chinese missiles. So in 2003, the Chinese built this tremendous missile base in Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, people don't know this. Media won't talk about it. Nobody wants to admit it. But the Chinese have given them 120 missiles. Only God knows how many nuclear warheads are on top of these missiles. So the Pakistanis are there. The Chinese are there. By the way, the Pakistanis are part of the Saudi force purportedly going into Syria at any moment. There are Pakistani soldiers now on the ground in Turkey. You know, you see these big jets landing in Turkey now in Çırlık Air Base. And Saudi Arabia saying, we're going to go into a land war against ISIS. What it really means, they're going to go into a land war against the enemy of ISIS, which is Bashar al-Assad. You know, we're looking at the makings of World War III here. If the Russians decide that they don't like this thing going on with Saudi Arabia attacking their ally in Syria, the Russians might strike back. And then the Saudis will come to America and say, hey, you got to defend us. We own you.
I don't know if I should be laughing or crying about that, but it's the truth. Then what are we going to do?
I'm just saying, I really, really pray to God that God find a way to prevent World War III from happening.
Yeah,
the Russians are so totally involved. And, you know, I don't think the Russians, you know, I'm a Sovietologist. I understand how the Russian thinking is. I don't think the Russians are going to tolerate the Saudis getting involved. And like I said before, the question is, will Obama in the next year that he's president or more, who knows, will Obama march against the Soviets? And now, you know, I don't know if you ever heard of a gentleman called Trevor Loudon.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard the name.
Trevor Loudon and I are great friends. But the funny thing is we have two completely different approaches. I talk about Obama being a Muslim. He talks about Obama being a communist. And actually, ironically, if Trevor Luden is right that Obama is a Soviet agent, then that actually will prevent a World War III from breaking out with the Russians, which is a good thing. So I'm not attacking Obama. I'm not supporting Obama. I'm just saying that if he's Soviet trained and he's pro-Russian, then Obama will do everything possible to avoid World War III with the Russians. But there are other people who might say, hey, let's hot diggity dog. You know, I mean, Senator McCain wants World War III with the Russians. You know, he hates them.
Wow.
He'll never forget what they did to him in Vietnam.
Yeah. One of the subplots, Avi, and I've heard you talk about this before, too. I wonder if you'd speak to it. One of the subplots in the intricacies in the Middle East is the Saudi and Iranian desire to own the holy sites. Does, in your opinion, do you think Iran has any designs on invading Saudi Arabia?
Okay, well, firstly, Pakistan came out very clearly and said that if Iran invades Saudi Arabia, there will be no more Iran. In other words, Pakistan, with its Saudi nuclear warheads that they've developed, Saudi paid for nuclear warheads, that Pakistan would nuke Iran.
Wow.
I'm telling you, this thing is so crazy
that
the enemies of God, the enemies of Israel, the enemies of the Christians are going to destroy each other.
Yeah.
Listen, the Iranians look at the Saudis and try to understand. Now, I'm trying to talk like a Muslim. So, you know, I'm not talking like an American or an Israeli or a Jew. I'm talking about here you have a Saudi leadership which controls the holy places, Mecca and Medina. And what do you have? You have these oil-rich princes from Saudi Arabia going off to gambling, drinking, and prostitution in the West.
Yeah.
Then come home. As soon as they're over Saudi airspace, they put on their traditional Galabiyah robes, and all of a sudden they're holy rollers, you know?
Yeah.
So the Iranian Shiites have always looked at things in a very pure, Puritan, pristine way. And for them, you know, the Saudis are the biggest hypocrites in the world. Number two, Saudi Arabia is a country of like 20 million people. About 80%, 90% are Sunnis, 10% are Shiites. And there's already trouble there brewing between them. The Saudis, for 20 million people, you know, hold on to your hat. They have 2 million slaves in Saudi Arabia. They have 1 million Hindus from India, 1 million Catholics from the Philippines. And these 2 million people, 10% really, in addition to the population, 10% are slaves, indentured servants. And the Shiites are saying, you know, you're bringing in these contaminants, these pollutant, you know, pagans. Hindus are pagans for the Muslims, and infidels are the Christians from or Catholics from Philippines. And if you don't get rid of them, we're going to behead all 2 million of them, and we're going to behead you too. Okay, that's number two. Number three, the Shiites hate the West. We've spoken about this already. And what are the Saudis doing? The Saudis, who I call the evolutionaries, they're selling the oil to the U.S. and to the West. They take the money, and what are they going to do with the money? Sleep on top of the money bales? Well, no, what they do is they take the money and they reinvest it back into America, back into Europe, back into the Western economies in order to buy it out for the glory of Allah. So the Iranians, who I would say are more like the revolutionary type of Muslims, are working at cross purposes with the Saudis, who are ready to go to bed with the Christian. You know, or in other words, go to bed with the Christians until they take everything over.
Yes. Yeah.
So Iranians are stirring up trouble with Hezbollah in Lebanon, stirring up trouble with Bashar al-Assad in Syria, stirring up trouble in Iraq through the Shiites of Iraq, stirring up trouble with the Houthis in Yemen, stirring up trouble in Bahrain. Bahrain is really, it's an island connected to Saudi Arabia by a bridge. But Bahrain is 70% Shiite, but it's ruled by 30% Sunnis. So there's trouble in Bahrain. All the countries in the Persian Gulf have tremendous Shiite populations. I'm telling you, it's a time bomb. It's a tinderbox ready to explode.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate the information. Now, where can listeners go, Avi, if they want to keep up with you besides your website?
Okay, well, YouTube. I have, I don't know, definitely have at least 100 YouTubes. And I've done many, many shows. You've heard of Chuck Missler, of course.
Yes.
I work very closely with Chuck Missler in Koinonia House. I work very closely with Gary Stearman, Prophecy Watchers.
Yes.
There are many different ministries that I've been interviewed by. And once you get into the YouTube, Avi Lipkin, one leads to another. And people have hundreds of hours of teachings that they can follow. My website is vicmoore.com. People can write to me. I answer them. And like with you, if I'm invited to a radio show or a Skype or a TV show, I do it. And, you know, I'm 67, praise God, and I'm very happy to be alive and very happy that every day is dedicated to serving the Lord.
Yes, amen. And your latest book, again, was what was the title of that, Avi?
Islamic Rivalry. And it's about Iran and the Sunnis fighting each other. Yes. And who backed whom. And then book number six is a very important book also. It's called A Return to Mecca, in which I'm predicting. Contrary to all the rabbis who don't want to look at it, I'm the only one in the world who's saying it. I'm saying that our exodus from Egypt took us into the Arabian Peninsula, and that Jethro, who is the father-in-law of Moses, was the high priest of Medina. And of Midian. And, you know, you ask the rabbis, they don't know where Midian is. I said, Midian is Medina. And the fact is that one of the names of Medina, the city of Medina in Arabia, one of the two holy sites, is Yathrib. Yathrib in Arabic means Jethro. And so the Arabs know. if you look at the New Testament, Galatians chapter 4, verse 25, says Hagar and Mount Sinai, which are in Arabia. So we all know that the Exodus from the New Testament took place in Arabia. I work very closely also with Jim and Penny Caldwell. Have you heard of them?
No, I have not.
Jim and Penny Caldwell lived 12 years in Saudi Arabia, worked with the oil companies, and on their free time, they'd go exploring. And they found the real Mount Sinai, which is in northwest Saudi Arabia. Ron Wyatt and Bob Cornuk also speak about the same subject, but the original material came from Jim and Penny Caldwell, who lived there and did not want to be revealed because they would have been killed by the Saudis. And so, you know, Bob Cornuk and Ron Wyatt came out with the theory that Mount Sinai is really in northwest Saudi Arabia, which I believe is 100% correct. So my book talks about the fact that the Jews are going to be returning to Saudi Arabia, northwest Saudi Arabia. I think the one world government is going to take the oil wells and going to command Israel to occupy northwest Saudi Arabia, because it's a very big country and Israel will be called upon to do its share. And what I'm going to say now is very unorthodox in Christianity. But what I'm saying is that the harlot dismounts the beast and kills it. I know in the New Testament it says that the beast kills the harlot. Yeah. And it could be that that's what really happens. Killing the harlot means destroying the economy of the world.
Yes.
And if that's true, then David Wilkerson's prophecy of the cities going up in flames is 100% correct. And we haven't seen anything yet.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with that completely. Well, Avi, we'll keep in touch via email. I'd like to, if you get anywhere close to Ohio, I'd like to be able to meet with you and chat for a little bit. And I'll put all this information, books, links to all that stuff will be in the show notes, and then I'll send you the link when it's posted. Appreciate you chatting with me today, Avi. I think this will be the first of many conversations as we watch all these things unfold. And thank you for being faithful to tell the truth.
God bless you. God save America.
Amen. Thank you very much, Avi. God bless you.
Bless you.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, Pastor Mike at woh.rr.com.